Sarat and Murciano, Monday afternoon. Glad you're with us today. Everybody, of course, still talking about Ernie Banks. And I was thinking about this, the baseball heroes of your youth are not supposed to die, especially somebody like Ernie. It really, really hurts. This one was just devastating, wasn't it? Just waves of sadness come over you about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised because I guess I just never thought of Ernie Banks as somebody who was going to die.
People have made that comment. People have written about that. And it's his personality, his demeanor, his liveliness.
Yeah, I can still hear him telling jokes and, you know, being kind of flaky and then suddenly not, you know, and saying something really funny or saying he wanted to come over to the house for Cuban food.
We had many conversations with him here, and we'll replay a couple of highlights for you in just a little bit.
He was a guy who I thought was, like, the vibe I always got from him anytime I saw him was that he just felt lucky to be here. He appreciated life. Like, I felt like he was a great lesson in gratitude. Like, if you talked to him for a little while, you would go, yeah, that he's right. Like, we should all feel really lucky.
And here was a guy who was picking cotton in Texas and then ended up being honored by the President of the United States. He would go golfing with the titans of industry, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. And our idols in baseball, you know, when they retire, you feel old for the first time in your life. When they pass away, it just doesn't compute. And this one certainly doesn't.
And he was not, for me at least, I mean, I didn't get to know him until later in his life. And I didn't love him because he was a great baseball player. Like, I loved who he was as a person that was not the baseball player.
Well, and that is why you're seeing this outpouring. As I said in that piece I wrote for the Sunday Trib.
That was so nice, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
That was beautiful.
It's we're mourning this way, this intensely, because of who he was as a person after his career and away from the field. And that is exactly really what he wanted, what he hoped would happen. And you'll hear that from Ernie in a little bit when we replay that that audio clip.
And by the way, that essay that Bob wrote that was in the Chicago Tribune on Sunday is posted on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sarat and Murciano. And you can just scroll down a couple of pictures. We spent the weekend posting different pictures of that we have in our arsenal of Ernie Banks, and there's still more. We have to mine your oldies. But I remember that was when you and I first started dating, and I don't think we were married yet. The first present I ever got you was, I remember making arrangements with the Chicago Cubs. It was very early on. I didn't know anybody. And I was just calling the front office, asking them to please have, next time that Ernie Banks was in there, could he please sign an autograph?
Oh, I have the happy birthday.
And then I framed it for you.
I have that in my office.
Yeah.
Since the news Friday night, Chicago has been deflated. Sorry, Tom Brady, but that best describes the way we all feel around here. And coming up, we will get Ferguson Jenkins and Randy Hundley together to talk about Ernie. That's going to be interesting. 1:38 for that. I have to tell what has become known around our household and in various TV and radio studios where I've told this story. It has become known as the Ernie Banks story. I have to tell that story today, don't I?
You have to, even though you've been on different radio shows here at the station saying that story, but you have to tell it. It's so funny because we were at dinner when we first heard that there was a rumor about this, and we were with another couple, and you told them that story.
It's the best Ernie Banks story there is, and I'll tell you, not because I'm involved in it, but because it encapsulates what this man possessed that everybody is struggling trying to communicate to people who never spent a lot of time around him, people who are trying to understand why this is so much more than the passing of a great baseball Hall of Famer. This story, this is the story that best communicates who Ernie Banks was and how unique he was. And I'll tell
from
the story.
From way back then. I mean, like always.
What do you mean from way back
you
then?
You know, from like he was all, you know, even years ago when the story takes place, he was the same he is now.
Yeah, I think he's been this.
Or he was.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And when should I tell that story? Should I tell it now?
Are we going to play a clip of Ernie Banks?
I don't know. What should we do? Should we tell the story or play
tell the
clip?
Story? Play the clip and then tell the story. How about that?
Well, let's listen to Ernie first.
Right.
Okay, let's listen to Ernie first. This we were lucky enough to have conversations with him many, many times on the air, on TV or radio. And this is one from one of our weekend shows that we used to do here. And it was, I believe, right after... It may have been after he got the medal from the president. I'm not sure, but I talked about it on the news, and then we had Ernie on the radio, and here's a little bit of that conversation. As I said on Fox Chicago News on my One More Thing recently about Ernie, he said at his statue dedication at Wrigley Field, the great thing about this is I'll be here even when I'm not here. And I talked about that and how Ernie... One of the great things is that he's around, he's in the game, he's visible, we get to celebrate him, we get to tell him how we love him and how we feel about him.
And now is the time for that statue.
And now is the time to tell Ernie all this stuff, because after all, what are you, 39 now?
Well, tell me about this. This is what I really have understood. Playing all day games at Wrigley Field, we didn't win. All of my career was playing daytime baseball. We didn't win, and people still remember me, like you all remembering me and a stature and all of that. Normally, it's people who won championships.
Right.
It's not somebody who didn't win a championship, played all day game. All the game was televised. Our home games, more than any other team in the major leagues. I was on television more than Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and all other players that played during my time. But we didn't win, and people still remember me, so... That's amazing to me.
You're a winner.
You're awesome.
And you're a champ. Ernie Banks on the Sunday Night Radio Special. More on WGN after this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something, as were all the encounters we had with him. And we'll have more a little later on. You know what is really strange? I found an old voicemail at home over the weekend. Now, Marianne's mad at me because we still have an answering machine. It doesn't have a tape in it. It doesn't have a cassette in it. It's not that old, but it, you know, it's got a chip in it. But it's an answering machine. And see, this is why I like answering machines, because you can save messages and then record them. I guess you could if
you, can save
you just
voice
had
messages
it on your,
too.
On your smartphone or something. But And tell me why. Now, we have all of these hours and hours of video and audio with Ernie Banks, but this little 10-second message he left, this was the one that really got me. This one seems more personal than any interview.
Well, I know, because he called our house.
It was after, this was after, I think, that TV piece I did that he called. And
it wasn't the first time, by the way, that he had called the house and left a message. He always left very cute, funny messages. Mm-hmm. But this one we kept, thanks to you being an old-fashioned guy and having an answering machine in spite of me harassing you about that. But then it was like right before leaving the house to come to work. I mean, that it just like... After a weekend of doing nothing but reading about him and seeing pictures of him and listening to, you know, interviews with Ernie Banks, I don't know why this was the final straw this morning.
Yeah, that really sort of made you just kind of, again, those waves of sadness that bring you to tears. Here's the little 10-second message you left.
Bob Serrano. hope this is your number. My name is Ernie Banks. When you get a chance, give me a call. I just want to thank you for your great, great, great story. Give me a call back. Thank you. Bye.
My name is Ernie Banks.
And he always left a message like that. And I hope this is your number. But he was always calling it. I mean, like when he would call it. That's so funny.
Oh, man. All right, I'll tell the story after a break. The story, it's absolutely true, and it's really the story that personifies Mr. Cub right after these. Facebook.com/Surratt and Murciano for, among other things, the Sunday Tribune piece on Ernie we were just talking about. We mentioned that at this time we were going to kick off our mystery name contest, and I think I'll tell you a little bit about it, but we'll probably kick it off tomorrow so that we can play a couple more of these clips from Mr. Cub. But it is going to be the largest prize package in Chicago radio history.
Okay.
With an asterisk. And not dollar amount necessarily.
The largest, quote unquote.
Yeah. The number of prizes, because we're giving away everything in our office. And the prize package keeps accumulating, because what's in our office is the swag people send us. Public relations people, authors, people who have DVDs and CDs, T-shirts, hats. All of that stuff will be given away. Also, whatever we're giving away on any given day at the radio station in the prize package here, for example, today it's pizza gift certificates and things like that. Then we also have the mystery name in a safe. And the safe is valued at $550. It's a very beautiful safe. It's the Elite safe with the electronic lock from the Stack-On company in Wakanda. Suggested retail price, $550. That will be part of the prize. And the whole idea of the game is we're going to put a name in there. Could be somebody living, could be somebody dead, but it's going to be somebody you'll know. And if you guess the name, you win everything. That's how it'll work.
And just so you know, we haven't finalized the name yet.
But hopefully we'll do that tomorrow
when we put
the name in the safe, and we'll video it, and we'll put it up online and on Facebook and so forth, and give you more details at that time. And we'll occasionally play the contest and take your calls. And sometimes when we're doing something else and we're talking to you, if you want to guess, you can do that too. That way it's fair for people who have trouble getting through to be the first caller or the second caller. You know what I mean? All right, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Now, here's the Ernie Banks story. Okay, now this is somewhere, I'm thinking, early 70s. I was over there at Roseville Radio Station playing the hits for the kids in the afternoon, and I would frequently go to Wrigley Field in the morning just to hang around, watch batting practice, because I was working from 2 to 6 p.m. in those days. And so one day, and this is sometime after Ernie Banks had retired, so it was around, it must have been 74 or 1975 or something. So I'm at the batting cage watching batting practice, weekday afternoon, beautiful day. But I can't stay for the game because I have to go to work. So about 1 o'clock or so, I say to a few of the people who were out there on the field with me, well, I got to go. I wish I could stay, but I got to go downtown. And Ernie Banks is there. He was doing something that day. And he says to me, hey, can I bum a ride downtown with you? And I'm thinking, Ernie Banks wants to hitch a ride with me? Are you kidding me? Of course, Ernie. Yes, come on. So in those days, I had a little red MG convertible. So we get in the car, and we're driving down Clark Street, south of Addison, a couple of blocks, and we're at a red light. And just to make conversation, I say this to Ernie. I had noticed a guy. I was looking at the between two of the three flat buildings on the street, and I was looking through the passageway, down the passageway, and I saw a guy in his backyard mowing the lawn. So I said to Ernie, hey, look at that guy taking care of his lawn today. It's a beautiful day. He should be at the ball game today. He shouldn't be mowing his lawn. And Ernie says, that's right. wait a second. And he gets out of my car. And I see this from my driver's seat, right? He runs down the passageway to where the guy is standing over his lawnmower. And he puts his arm around the guy. And he's talking to him, pointing back towards the ballpark. And obviously he's saying to him, you should be at the game today. You shouldn't be mowing the lawn. And then he runs down.
Can you imagine what that guy was thinking?
Back up the passageway, you know, back. He jumps in the car again. And so we drive off. And before we drive off, I look down to where the guy is standing, frozen over his lawnmower, just staring into space with that look like, I can't believe what just happened. And we drive off. And to this day, you know that that guy tells people about the day he was mowing the lawn on a beautiful weekday afternoon in his backyard there in Wrigleyville. And the great Ernie Banks, the Hall of Famer himself, came into the backyard and said, why don't you go to the Cubs game today? And for sure, no one has ever believed that guy, right? Because that's impossible that ever happens.
Can that guy come forward? I wish he would. I wish he, if he's still around.
Funny story.
He would come forward.
Funny story. I was emceeing an event. I think it was, what was it? The Landmark People of Illinois or something, where they honor people as human landmarks. And I was emceeing this event where Ernie Banks was honored as one of the landmarks of Chicago, and also Harold Ramis was honored. The late, great writer, director, came out of Second City here. So I told that story before I brought Ernie up. And by the way, just when you thought Ernie was really flaky, and Marianne, you were witness to this. Again, this happened in like the mid-70s sometime, but I'd be talking to Ernie like as recently as a year or two ago, and he'd ask me about that car. Do you still have that MG?
I know,
and
I
you think, how can he possibly remember
because
that?
Because you gave him a ride.
No, how can he possibly remember all those years? That's my point. Just right. When you think he's flaking out on you, he'll pull something like that out. And then he started up with me, remember? I'll find that car. I want to buy that car. But anyway, yeah. So at this event where Ernie's honored and Harold Ramis is honored, so I tell that story, and then Ernie comes up, gives his speech. Then I introduce Harold Ramis, who's going to get an award as well. And Harold, being the comedy genius that he is, first thing out of his mouth when he gets up on stage is, one day I was in my backyard mowing the lawn. Wasn't that great? Remember that?
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great.
All right. More on Ernie from the great Ferguson Jenkins and one of my all-time favorites and one of yours too, Randy Hundley. We'll get them together here at 1:38. Sarat and Marciano in the afternoon. It's a little disconcerting realizing your favorite Cubs as a kid are now statues. But we've got a couple of guys on the line here who deserve their own statues, too. Number 31, the great Hall of Famer Fergie Jenkins, and good old number 9, Randy Hundley. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, guys. What's
Hello,
up,
Bob and Marianne.
Nice to be with all of you. And there's not much more to be said about Ernie that hasn't been said already. I'm curious, when was the last time, Fergie, you talked to him? And you too, Randy. Fergie, you go first.
Well, I talked to Ernie in November. He was staying there at the Trump Tower. We went in to just to have a cordial little dinner, and he seemed Ernie's normal self, pretty boisterous, talking to everybody. We went down and had lunch, but that's the last time I talked to him. It was really unfortunate. Couldn't see him prior to that. Right, it supposedly fell at Christmas, and that's when it all started.
Randy.
Well, I think the last time I actually talked to Ernie was at Eddie Vedder's show in Wrigley Field. Back in the, I'm not sure when it was, September or so.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good then, but I saw him another time later on, and I just didn't think Ernie looked good at all. And at the Cubs convention, I wondered why he wasn't with us, and I missed him at the Cubs convention being there, and needless to say, when we got the news Friday night, it was very upsetting.
You know, we know what he was like off the field. We know what he did on the field. What was he like in the dugout? What was he like in the clubhouse?
Well, Ernie was always boisterous, always talked about the game. He always had a saying. He started off maybe in spring training, especially 69, the Cubs are going to shine at 69. He had a saying at 67, 68, 70. He was just a guy that, to me, loved the game, wanted to talk about it. I just think that baseball really, really is going to miss. He was an icon, believe me, and he just promoted the game as much as possible, and the Cubs, and the city of Chicago.
Well, Randy, you're on the bench with Fergie, and you're out there. You're really the I know Cassano was the captain, but you're DeRocher's man out there. You and Fergie are going over hitters. You're studying things, and Ernie's singing and coming up with the poems. Did you ever just want to say, Ernie, could you just go to the other end of the dugout for a while and leave me alone?
Well, a couple times, yeah. We kind of wish that, but... you know what? I respected him so much as a player that I would never, ever say anything like that to him. I used to sit with him on a plane quite a bit. And Fergie, as you know, Ernie always communicated to you with a question. He didn't make a statement. He would question you as to what you thought about certain situations. That's the way Ernie conversed, and we're going to miss that. I didn't think that we'd ever miss it, but we are going to miss having Ernie Banks ask questions.
What kinds of questions? What do you mean? Like related questions?
Oh, he wanted to know how your mother-in-law's doing, how's your wife doing, you know, if you got a sister or a brother, and why aren't they married?
Yeah.
That's so exactly him.
Yeah, and Randy, you touched on it when you said we never thought we were going to miss it. I know what you mean. We thought he was going to live forever, didn't we, because of that personality?
That's the truth. That's what I said last night. I just thought he was going to be with us forever. And then to see him get ill and then we'd lose him, it's very frustrating. And to say the least, we're certainly going to miss it.
Was there something about him that people don't know, maybe? I mean, all we have heard are these amazing tributes to him, and I just wonder if there are parts of him that we just didn't know. Like,
yeah, did we know everything about Ernie? Was what we saw basically who he was?
I don't know.
Not really. I
think you know all about it.
You know, when Leo joined the ball club, he was looking to really, really go young. And Ernie was the older statesman on the team, like 38 years old. And believe me, he gave the first base job away several times. Bacabella, Lee Thomas, Dick Nin. And it seemed like Ernie would win it back within the first month of the season, hitting home runs, diving in runs. And that's the kind of ball player he was. He let his performance speak for itself a lot of times. And he went out there, even with a bad hip or a bad shoulder, he could still hit the ball, believe me. What a hitter Ernie Banks was.
Yeah, I guess we don't think of him as the tough guy, right, playing hurt, but he was, wasn't he,
well,
Randy?
Bob, you know, he was pretty quiet in the clubhouse. But once he got out in front of the fans, he let himself be heard by almost everybody. And he loved coming to the ballpark. I think it was an escape for him. And being able to be there, play baseball, and talk about it amongst the fans and his teammates. But we didn't hear too much about, you know, the fact that he played first base. The opposing team's dugout is right there. He talked to them all the time.
Oh, he would rattle through them. I know Randy and I could hear him. He would rattle the on-deck man. Sorry, Dick Allen, you ain't going to hit Jenkins today. No. That ain't going to work. He'd get out Stargell all the time or McCovey. He was just a guy that just wanted to let people know, hey, what's going on in the game today and what the circumstances are going to be and the end result was going to be good for you.
You guys could hear him doing that, huh?
Oh, definitely.
I didn't hear him. I didn't want to hear him talking that trash.
I was afraid we'd get
probably when we go to the plate.
Yeah, because you could hear them.
No secret, Leo DeRocher, your manager in 69, didn't get along with Banks, as you alluded to, Fergie. Why? Was it that Leo was jealous of Ernie's popularity? We've heard that.
Well, yes. That could have been the case in some circumstances. But as I said, they were trying to go young. And Ronnie and both Billy were like 10 years younger than Ernie. I was only 22 years old at the time. And he was, Kenny Holson was young, Rich Nye, Joe Negro, Randy, Bill Hand, so many guys. He wanted to get this team young again, to really build it in the mode he wanted. And that first year, we lost 103 ball games in 1966 when I joined the team. We were better in 67, 68, 69. We should have won it. So Leo had a plan, and Ernie wasn't really involved in that, but Ernie ended up being part of it.
Well, Bob, let me just add something to it. I must say that I really think Leo was jealous of Ernie because Ernie got so much publicity, and Leo wanted to be the number one guy, and Ernie was the number one guy, and I think that caused a lot of aggravation for Ernie in particular because Leo would get on it. I remember when he called, Fergie wasn't there yet, but he called a clubhouse meeting, and I want to tell you, he got on Charlie Grimm, he got on Yoshi Kawano, and the last one he got on was Ernie Banks, and it shocked the daylights out of me. I thought, holy cow, I couldn't even get the ball back to the pitcher. I was so scared for a while, and he didn't like Ernie, but at times he certainly showed that he didn't.
Hmm. And did that change over time at all?
Well, Ernie kept winning the job back.
So.
Willie Smith, or as I said, John Bacabella, Lee Thomas, he'd give the job to them right after spring training, and they didn't hit. They put Ernie back in the lineup, get two hits, hit a game-winning home run. But Ernie just played his way back into the starting lineup.
And you talk about him being chirpy and whatnot. Excuse me. Believe me, Ernie never said a word about it. He just played hard every day, and he didn't say much in the dugout. He was very quiet, but you get him aside, like on an airplane going somewhere, and sit with him. You knew what he thought then, and I had some interesting conversations with him.
And
I'll bet.
Were there any days that you know maybe you guys were tired a little bit and you just didn't feel like playing too or hearing about it?
Well, Ernie,
I love hearing every day from Ernie.
he played that first game and get a couple of hits, and they might pinch hit him in a second game, but I just think that the enthusiasm he had would rub off on certain people. I mean, he was always in a great mood. And I'd write in the odd time with him or Billy Williams coming to the ballpark. And he'd be just talking about the game, who we're playing. We got to beat Drysdale today. We got to beat Carlson today. We got to beat Seaver. And if he'd be in the lineup, I'm getting two today. You watch and see, I'm going to get two. And that's the way he was.
Yeah. I'm thinking, Randy, for so long you worked with Fergie, the great battery mates, Jenkins and Hundley, and I know you two guys are in different locations right now, but before an interview, do you tell Fergie what to say? Do you call his pitches on the radio?
Hey, listen to me, Bobby. I took care of Fergie and called the right pitches. He would stand out on the mound and shake his head. No, I don't want that pitch. I don't want that one. No, I don't want that one either. I'd come back to the one that I first put down. Yeah, that's the one I want. I think to myself, what in the world are you doing, Fergie? Speed the ball game up. Let's get out of here. It's hot. And but he had his way, and I was fortunate enough to catch him for several years, and I mean, he was a great winner for us.
It was kind of a fun situation having Randy come out there. Well, tell me what pitch you want. I go, come on, Randy, just put the fingers down again. We'll go over it again. But we had a lot of fun doing that. Very seldom did I ever cross Randy up. and we shake off, and come back to the original pitch.
It's always a thrill being with you guys, and I must say, being at that Randy Hundley fantasy camp back in the early 80s with you guys and Ernie and Billy and Ronnie, one of the great thrills. And I know, Randy, you're still doing that, and it's still a great thrill. You do a great job with that out there in Arizona. And we should say, if people want to find out more about that, do you have a website set up or a number, Randy?
Yeah, we have a website set up, CubFantasyCamp.com. We'd love to hear from anybody that would be interested in coming. We just finished up a camp here in Arizona, and we had a wonderful time, wonderful weather, and sometimes it's sad that it's over this quickly, but I'm glad this one is over, huh, Ferg?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had fun. I mean, it was really too bad to finish off the camp and know one of your best teammates passes away. But I think we enjoyed it. We had six teams, and the guys, after the first couple of at-bats, they really get competitive. This has been, it's really surprising. I mean, they get, when they put that uniform on, they get competitive.
Cubs Fantasy
sure
Camp.
Cubs, and, of course, we love it when they're competitive.
CubsFantasyCamp.com. I can tell you that the big game, the camp ends with a big game where the campers play the major leaguers. And in our game, I got up to bat. Fergie's on the mound, and Hundley's back there behind the plate. Banks is on first base. And Randy says to me, he's going to throw you a pitch, you know, kind of medium fast, but it's going to be right there, like on the outside corner, belt high. And as my brain is computing this, the ball's already past me in Hundley's glove. And then he says, okay, now he's going to throw you a slow one, and it's going to be about letter high, and it's just going to come straight to you. And again, it's like, okay, I'm ready. The ball's in Hundley's mitt. And finally, the third pitch he lobbed to me, so I hit a weak ground ball to the right side. And one of the great thrills of my life, of course, Ernie Banks picking up the ball, stepping on first base before I got there. But if you haven't done that, it's one of the great thrills to do that. Have you guys heard anything about funeral arrangements?
No, we haven't. I was wondering what was going on with
the showing of the body is going to be Friday, funeral Saturday. And I'm hoping that Randy, one of my favorite teammates, we're going to both of us be pallbearers. That'd be a great honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Billy, of course. Right. So, funeral in Chicago, you've heard?
I'm pretty sure Chicago, yes. Mm-hmm.
And, some of my later memories of Ernie, whenever I would go to a game, is seeing him outside there with you guys often signing autographs, sitting there in, you know, some chairs, signing autographs, and lines of people, you know, waiting to
spring training.
See you guys for spring training. Yeah, I've seen that too. And I always wonder, like, with all of you have such great attitudes, and with Ernie, I mean, it was always like you always felt like he was just talking to you, and he had all the time in the world for you. Was he saying something behind our backs when we walked away?
I doubt
what
it.
What was he? How could you stay positive and sunshiny for so long?
Well, I
don't think Ernie ever said anything bad about anybody, but he loved to sign autographs. I mean, it might take you 10 minutes to get the autograph signed, but he signed it for you.
Yeah. Randy, he was for real, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was very much so.
Okay, listen, you talk about salt of the earth. It doesn't get any better than Ferguson Jenkins and Randy Hundley. Sorry we're talking in such sad times, but it's always good to catch up with you guys. I look forward to seeing you down the road.
Well, thank you, Bob, and to you and Marianne also.
I think that room with Ernie, what a great guy. I mean, baseball just lost a big ambassador for the game, believe me.
Yeah, and as they've said, an ambassador for humanity as well.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
All right, guys. We'll see you soon. Serrata Murciano on a gray, snowy Monday afternoon. And as promised, a couple more replays from recent interviews we had with good old number 14, Mr. Cub. He shared a birthday with Jackie Robinson. Ironically enough, they were both born on the 31st of January. Ernie, 1931. He would have been 84 next week. Jackie Robinson, born in 1919. And in this clip, you hear a little bit about Jackie. Ready?
Right. Yeah, let's hear it.
Back on the WGN, back on the WGN Sunday Night Radio Special with number 14, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. Whenever I've interviewed Ernie over the years and told people I was going to talk to him, they always ask me the same thing. Find out if he's always like that. Is he constantly happy, positive, and optimistic? Are you?
Am I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Always?
The wind's at his back.
When are
Didn't
you in
you
a bad
him?
Mood?
The wind, you just said it. The wind is at my back. It's just wonderful. I mean, my whole life is going to another level and being around interesting people and learning from them. But Jackie Robinson told me, listen and you'll learn. And that's what I did all of my life. I just listened to people, didn't talk a lot, and learned a lot. I learned a lot from Gene Baker. He started here with me with the Cubs, and he would, you know, tell me how to play different positions, how to swing, how to do this and that. Don't go here, don't go there. And I listened to him. He's a little bit older than me, but he's a remarkable person.
Was there a lot of pressure? Or did you feel the pressure of coming into a predominantly white game?
No, I did not. I mean, I thought about how my life would be coming from a segregated society with the Kansas City Monarchs into an integrated society. So it was a wonderful experience for me to learn about other people, the culture, just listen to them. You know, we had Ralph Kiner, Hank Sauer, they were all playing for the Cubs at that time. So I just watched them, listened to them. And
so, and what made you listen? Because I want to use that on my 11-year-old, who, by the way, was so excited that we were going to see you today, that last night during dinner she stopped eating dinner when she heard, you know, that we were going to talk to you, and said, and started looking for things, that something that you could sign, and she could not believe it. She wanted to take the day off from school because we were going to see you today, and she wanted to be here with you. But anyway, back to listening and learning, who taught you that? How do you teach a kid that?
Well, I got it from the basketball player. He played for Ohio State. I can't think of his name. Bob Lucas. Lucas. He had a program where he trained people out of sports how to listen. Just listen and learn. Listen to, you know, so you know their name and where they're from and what school they went to. And I did a lot of that when I became a first baseman for the Cubs. I did a lot of that to a lot of the players who got on first base, luckily, against the Cubs. I would say things to them. They'd look at me and, I mean, how did you know that? I knew everything.
Because you were taught then? You were actually trained by somebody to listen?
To listen.
You alone, or it was
just
a class, or
just
what?
Just me. It was a class, but I did it alone.
Right.
But I just learned, you know, like now, I mean, learn somebody's name and where they're from, what school they went to, how many children they had, their wife's name. And I just knew all of that.
I hear that Ernie would even tell
That's unbelievable.
Players who got to first base when he moved from shortstop to first base, Ernie would talk to the opposing player who got to first base, and he'd tell him to go out on Rush Street.
Yeah.
Oh, hoping what, Ernie? If you told them to stay out, go out on Rush Street, you wanted them to stay out too late, right?
Well, they did. A lot of them did.
And then the next day, Cubs have an advantage.
But I knew that. You know, I knew that when they came to Wrigley Field, you know, day baseball, they played all night game, and they think about Rush Street. They want to go down there. And I did that to Richards. You remember him, a pitcher for the Houston Astros?
Oh, the big guy.
Yeah, J.R.
J.R.
Richards. I asked him, are you going down on Rush Street? He looked at me, yeah, how did you know?
Ernie Banks from one of our Sunday Night Radio specials. What would he want us to be talking about today? I think you'll get a clue in this next clip. Want to play one more bit from a conversation we had just about 1 year ago today here on our Noon to Three show. And before you leave, you know, we don't often interview statues, so I want to ask you about this. You said one time that you want people to think about you, and it's nice when they see the statue, and years from now they will be able to read about your accomplishments on the field. But other things are more important to you than that. Talk about that.
Yes, it really is. I mean, statues are very nice, but many people that come around, it, they don't know what you did. They don't know anything about you. They see the statue, right. Oh, yeah, he was here. And what did he do?
They're too young.
They're too young, and I always thought about that. I mean, and I want to be like Rodin. You ever heard of Rodin? I got a statue of Rodin. You all ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Sounds like what's it, like a Japanese monster movie?
No, Rodin was a great thinker.
Oh, no, that Rodin, yes. Rodin.
A philosopher.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So I had one drone of me to put out here at Millennium Park.
And you were in the thinking position with your knuckles underneath your chin?
That's right.
You thought a lot, yeah.
The thinker.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. I was a thinker when I played. Thinking is a big part of the game, is thinking. And you know, I look at the players, you know, the guys that went into the Hall of Fame, you know, Greg Maddux and Tom Glavin, and how they played the game. They were thinking people. Maddux was just a thinking player. I mean, that's the pitcher. I mean, he just thought.
But you want people to think about you in terms of other things you have done in life. And by the way, the thinker was the sculpture by Rodin, Auguste Rodin.
Auguste Rodin.
Mm-hmm. So, but you want people to be aware of the other things, accomplishments in your life, don't you?
Yes, I do. I really do. And when I played, you know, playing was one thing, but knowing who I am is another thing. That many people that I met, other than Jack Brickhouse and the statues right out here, Jack Brickhouse was one guy that stood in my corner, and I met him later on, and he really supported me away from the field, and then I went up to broadcast with him one time, and he was just a wonderful person to me, and I had a lot of good times with him.
Ernie Banks, can't get him to talk about himself. I keep trying, though. We have to break for news, and I'll see you later on over at the Cubs convention.
All right, I'll get you a hot dog.
And, thank you so much, Ernie.
Let's eat two hot dogs today. Always fun. Ernie Banks, that was from January of last year.
I think that's the last time we interviewed him, isn't it?
I ran into him since then.
Radio. Yeah, we've run into him, but
no, I think we had him on once before. But
Once
after that. But he was trying to say there that Jack Brickhouse really knew him, knew who he was,
right.
And that's what was important to Ernie Banks, being known for the person he was and what he did after the game. Somebody else who's got a really good story. I told my Ernie Banks story, the one I like most earlier, but someone else who's got a good one is someone you may know, Jim Toronto, better known as Elton Jim. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Jim.
Hey, well, this is Randy Hunley again, Bob. How you doing there?
If we didn't get him, we could have called you.
That's right.
I love his voice.
Always loved the Rebel. Yeah. So,
how you guys doing? I miss seeing you guys every day.
We miss seeing you, too.
I know. We miss you.
Tell me about your encounter with Ernie. Now, this happened some years ago. Is that correct?
This is about, I saw your piece in the Tribune, and to be honest, when I heard that Ernie passed away, you were one of the first people I thought of.
Well, I'm not sure what that means, but
a famous long-suffering fan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you.
Well, so am I. So give me a break. I thought it'd be a cool story because you're hearing so much about what he did on the field, and he certainly had an amazing record on the field, and he's certainly a first-time Hall of Famer, and 14 All-Star games, 512 home runs. But so about 15 years ago, I'm going to drop someone off at O'Hare, and when you go to the departure thing up there, it's always very chaotic. There's cars pushing in, cabs, people stop their cars, grab their bags out of their trunks, and so it's always kind of hectic. And so I see a spot by the curb, and I'm ready to pull in, and this big black stretch limo just flies in right in front of me and cuts me off.
I hate when that happens.
Oh, my God. So, and when that happens, you start shaking because I really had to sit, slam on the brakes and, I'm, angry now. And so I'm just kind of settling down. I'm waiting for that car now for those people to get out of their car so I can take this spot. And as I'm sitting there, I notice someone coming from behind my car up to the driver's window. So I roll the window down, and there's Ernie Banks. And so now he's like 4 inches, you know, he leans in. So he's like 4 inches away from me. And I immediately recognized him. And if I didn't, of course, I would have, because he had his black Mr. Cub hat on. He always, hey, self-promotion, right? He always wore that thing. But so he leans in, and he just said, you know, in that voice, like you've had all these clips today, you know, hey, man, I just wanted to make sure that you were okay. Because I'm really sorry that the limo driver cut you off like that. And I just wanted to make sure you're okay. And so I'm trying to digest all this. And I said, you know, Ernie, I was upset, but you know what? Ernie Banks can cut me off anytime he wants. And so he laughed and he put his hand on my shoulder through the window. And we just, said, hey, it's great to see you, blah, blah, blah. And he just went about his business. And you know, ever since then, you know, I was just like, okay, you know, especially today, we're seeing, you know, people like Bill Cosby and these stories about these icons, and they might not be living up to the good legends that they supposedly are. And I just thought that, you know, your listeners and Cub fans should know that this guy was a class act, and as you've said many times today, he really was the real deal. He wasn't driving the car.
Right.
Oh, and I'm sure it wasn't his limo driver. I'm sure it was a rented limo with somebody dropping him off. He had no reason come to me and do that.
He was just being a nice guy.
Getting out of the car to tell the guy to go to a Cub game.
Larger than life, nicer than life. That was Ernie. That's a good story.
I was just like, wow, that's a class act. And I even said to myself, did this just happen?
Yeah, I know. Now,
you must have been like the story that Bob told about the guy mowing his lawn.
Yeah, other celebrities would not get out of the car. You know, no way.
Exactly. Yeah.
The only thing I was surprised about your story, Bob, that didn't have the kicker, so he didn't give that guy free tickets?
Yeah, everybody says that. You know what? I don't think so. I never asked, though. Maybe he did. I don't know.
Maybe he said something.
When I tell the story in the future, I think I'll throw that in, because it could have happened that way.
Yeah. To give him 2 box seats.
Yeah, exactly. It's a better story.
Come on.
What are you up to these days, Jim?
Well, Marianne, I tell you, my scrapbooking and my cross stitch keep me very busy. and Bob, you know how that is.
Yes.
Yes,
okay.
He does.
I've been there. I've cross stitched and scrapbooked.
I did something very cool. I officiated my godson's wedding.
Well, that's a nice thing.
That's really nice.
That was very cool, and it went so well that after the ceremony, I booked 2 weddings, a funeral, and a bar mitzvah.
Are you a minister now?
Yeah, well, the Universal Life Church, 15, oh. I think it was 1995.
That's right. That means you sent in a magazine ad.
Right, and
got something back.
I called the county clerk because I was like, this doesn't seem real.
Elton Jim.
Exactly. Nobody remembers Reverend Jim from Taxi anymore. So.
No. Elton Jim, they'll remember.
Yeah, good. So it's legit. And in fact, if that whole thing goes well, I might take up a bris as well. I might become a Moyle. Yeah, I'm going to go to Jewel right after we talk and get those little Vienna cocktail wieners.
Yeah, you practice.
And just practice. Because, you know, you don't want to make a mistake down there.
No, you don't.
All right. Say good night, Elton Jim.
Okay, but it's good to hear from you guys. And like I said, your Ernie Banks tribute. This is the show to listen to for an Ernie Banks tribute. There's no doubt about that.
Appreciate
thanks a lot.
That.
It's good to hear from you.
Take care.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon, I hope.